This podcast is recorded on stolen and unceded Aboriginal land.
We acknowledge the First Nations and elders of this country, and we join their calls for justice.
Hello, you stupid white bastards.
Tom, no slurs on the show. We'll get in trouble.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I said the SWB words. I'm sorry,
yeah,
everyone.
Well, ACASWB, as they say. All cops are stupid white bastards. You, the Sam Kerr, stupid white bastard, quote-unquote racial slur story. When I suggested this yesterday, you still hadn't heard what she said, and it sounded like you were expecting that she'd actually genuinely racially harassed or abused a police officer in the UK, as was being reported by media up until that point. What did you think? Did you really think that Sam Kerr would have done that?
I don't know. I had no idea. We didn't know the race of the police officer. We didn't know what had been reported. I don't know. Sometimes people get drunk and say terrible things. It's not outside the realms of possibility. But I guess as someone tweeted, she did the very rare reverse milkshake duck in which people had preemptively cancelled. Turns out she just called a cop a stupid white bastard and became a national hero.
Well, it seems to me, that's what I mean. There seem to be two kinds of people. The people who immediately knew that she had like called a cop white and that was being reported as a racial slur, and people who were like, oh, Sam Kerr is bad. Whereas it must have been hours before the story actually broke. It was a little longer until I actually saw what she had said. But I had said to my boyfriend, like I got home and I was like, so what do you reckon Sam Kerr said? Because there had been reports at that point for like a couple of days. She's been charged with quote unquote racially harassing or racially abusing a police officer in the UK. And then eventually they just started reporting it as, yeah, like a racial slur that she'd used. But I was like, yeah, what do you think she actually said? And we both almost simultaneously were like, oh, I reckon she called him a white dog. Now, white dog, not quite there. Like, I feel as though it was close, but yeah, a stupid white bastard.
You like, white dog. Well, but I mean, I guess, and this points out the ridiculousness of the whole situation. I wouldn't have thought that a white person would take a person of color to court for racial abuse. Call me fucking crazy. But no, I forgot that a British police officer.
It's not a person, Tom. It's a cop.
Oh,
it's a cop.
Sorry. That's right. They are a different category. I apologize.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have been wondering about this, like how many racial discrimination or whatever cases, are white people being like, they called me white and they're brown. And then John Pacini, the historian, tweeted that when the Racial Discrimination Act was passed in 1975, the majority of complaints received in the first few years were from British migrants upset at being called POMs.
I assume that's where the phrase whinging POMs come from. As soon as that Discrimination Act kicks, they're going, they call me white and I don't
POMs,
like it.
Because they were fucking whinging about being called POMs. My God, yeah. Let's not even do any of the discussion on the discourse around whether this is actually racism, because if the shoe was on the other foot and you flipped it around, because that's not how logic works. It's not, if you reverse this situation and its entire historical context, would you feel the same way? No, I wouldn't. There you go.
Yes.
Answered your question.
That's different. Well, there's a very famous routine from the brilliant comedian Alma Rahman, who is one half of Fear of Brown Planet with Nazeem Hussain, former Serious Danger guest, which is like talking about reverse racism, right? Mm-hmm. And basically lays out the way for reverse racism to work out is you would need to change all of world history. And then, you know, and replaces every single thing that's happened to people of color, it's happened to white people. And then in that case,
if after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of that, I got on stage at a comedy show and said, hey, what's the deal with white people? Why can't they dance? That would be reverse racism.
Brilliant routine that sort of lays out exactly what it is. But, I mean, Janet Albrightson is tweeting saying, so stupid white bastard is not racist, but stupid black bastard is. If there are different rules for different people, the whole liberal project falls apart. That's not hard to understand, which is like, oh, no, my liberal project. my sweet, precious liberal project.
No, racism is about the exercise of, like, discrimination or violence on the basis of a racial hierarchy in which white is at the top of the hierarchy generally, and then black is, you know, often at the bottom. that's it. Like, and that the, there's a whole historical context backing that and a current context backing that. And that's what racism is. So you're welcome.
Laughing and learning. Incredible reporting from Six News, again, our favorite news outlet.
Laughing and learning.
Where they basically posted a graphic where they've asked all the different premiers, apparently, or are going to determine whether or not this is or is not racist. So far, at time of recording, Chris Minns, New South Wales Premier, says not racist. Roger Cook, Western Australia Premier, says not racist.
Not racist.
Yet to hear from Miles, Jacinta Allen, Jerry Rockliffe, and Peter Malinauskas of SA. Very, very interesting reporting as to how it's all going to shake out. And also,
waiting for the verdict.
What about the Northern Territory and the ACT and those leaders? Shouldn't we find out from them?
Only the states, I guess. Territory erasure.
All of those people, I guess, maybe not Malinauskas, but it would also be stupid white bastards, I guess, technically.
True.
Talk about the Greens, that bunch of idiots.
She has described the Greens as very, very dangerous. I agree.
These people, these Greens, they are snake oil salesmen.
We're stuck with the hosts of Chapo Shithouse podcast.
This is a serious danger to Australia.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Serious Danger, a podcast with two stupid white bastards about green politics in Australia. It's not an official Greens Party podcast, but it is made possible with the help of the Green Institute, produced by Michael the Griff Griffin. This week, we're talking all things in the Greens fight for housing policies that might actually do something to address the housing crisis. And we do a quick check-in on the Brisbane City Council elections and the texting scandal with Stephen Miles. But before we get into it, thank you to our new patrons. Alexander, Beck, Jack, Daniel, Alberto, Tree Mugger, that's good, Jane, and Mitchell. Thanks, legends. We love you. Being a patron, it helps keep the show going. It's only $3 a month. You get access to a whole bunch of special bonus content. What's the latest one that we've put out?
Latest one was that
on the Patreon
conversation
feed
with Jesse Noakes and WA about the, speaking of housing, the public housing crisis and the WA state government's wonderful habit of evicting First Nations families from public housing. You can do no grounds evictions out of public housing, for God's sakes. Jesse's a good friend of the show and a fantastic activist. That was a great conversation. Plus, there's the whole back catalogue of episodes that you can access once you become a patron at patreon.com/seriousdangerau.
Really, really good stuff. There is heaps of stuff there. I would say you're getting more than your money's worth with that back catalogue. And you'll feel good about supporting Serious Danger. Other ways you can support the show, come see us live. We've got two shows coming up in April, almost half sold out already, which is nutso. We are doing a show in Narm, Melbourne on Saturday, the 6th of April at 1:30 p.m. at Comedy Republic. That is around the same time as the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And we're in Mianjin, Brisbane on Saturday, the 27th of April at 2 p.m. at Good Chat Comedy Club. Tickets are, what, between like $25 and $28 or something? They're different between the cities. So, you know, depending on whether you want to pay each ticket price, that's how you can decide which show you want to go to. I think we are also planning to maybe have another run of some merch, some shirts, and we'll have stickers there as well if you want to come and grab some. But we'll have some fantastic guests, TBC. We will do content at the live shows that will not be on the main feed. So if you want some exclusive content, laughs, and just to be in a room full of legends, you should absolutely come to one of those shows.
Yes, please.
Meet me in the mall in Brisbane. Warm your heart and soul in Brisbane. Meet me in the city sunshine. Meet me when it gets to fun time. Meet me.
A message from Fred, one of our lovely patrons. Hi, SD. Serious Danger. I'd like to request another vibe check, this time for the Brisbane City Council election. This coming weekend, is the last one before Election Day. How does Emerald feel about the seats the Greens would win by repeating federal results, i.e. in the Gabba, obviously, Corporoo, Walter Cooper. Taylor, Paddington Central, Morningside.
It's Cooperoo. Corporoo.
Cooperoo?
Yeah.
Have they misspelled it or is there an
R? No, you've said it wrong.
It's spelled C-O-O-R-P-A-R-O-O and it's pronounced Cooperoo?
Yeah, Cooperoo, Coops.
Why is the R in there?
I don't know, Tom. I'm not the mayor of Brisbane.
Well, clearly, not yet. Cooperoo, Paddington Central, Morningside, Holland Park, Inaugura. Did I get that one right?
Well done.
Thank you.
And this the is Gap. Good.
and Pullen Vale. I don't know, just listing Brisbane suburbs. Who cares? How's the race for the Lord Mayor shaping up? Yep. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, vibe check on the Brisbane City Council election. Maybe last time we did a vibe check on this was probably when we had Jono Sriranganathan on the show, who is running for Lord Mayor for the Greens. And he was like, we're going to win all the seats. And I was like, well, I'm not sure if we are. I am feeling slightly more optimistic now, but I'm always a pessimist. So I'm always like, we're not going to win anything. I think we will keep the Gabba, which was formerly Jono's seat, now held by Tarina Massey, and that's kind of in like Green's heartland. That's within the seat of Griffith and also the seat of South Brisbane, which we hold both of. As to picking up other seats, I do see it as the conventional wisdom in the party at the moment, I think, is that maybe we could, we're in with a good shot of picking up like four, potentially, like maybe three additional seats. But I mean, the way that the federal election went, I now am like, I don't fucking know how to predict any of this shit because I thought we weren't going to win anything. And then we won three federal seats and a senator. So, yeah, we could win them all. I think we will retain the Gabba, but the other ones, yeah, like Cooperoo, Walter Taylor, Paddington, perhaps most likely next, but we'll see. What I will say is,
how's the campaign and the debates going on? What are the big issues that are coming up?
So the LNP has been in very like unhinged attack mode, which is what makes me think that we're more likely to win because they're acting the way that they act when we have won before. And particularly the stories that I've heard from how they're acting on the pre-poll booths, just like so defensive and weird and like people coming up to them at the booth and, or, you know, saying that they are voting Green now because they were disappointed about something, even though they used to be an LNP voter. And apparently one of these LNP candidates who was there and heard that was like, okay, do you want me to unsubscribe you from the email then? Like, instead of just trying to win their vote, they're just like bitter. Like, it's as though they've given up. And so, and they're also distributing these flyers that that say the Greens will make crime worse and have this kind of list of ridiculous policies, and they've all got Jono's head next to the local candidate being like, this candidate supports Jonathan Sriranganathan's radical positions, they'll make crime worse, they endorse shoplifting, they wrote a guide on how to break and enter, and they're great attack flyers. And all of that stuff indicates to me like they're really scared. I don't know if they have polling that shows that they're going to lose, but they're just giving that vibe. So that makes me more likely to think that they will win. Jono had there was the Lord Mayoral debate this week, I think like hosted by Channel 9 or whatever, but kind of the main one that I think Jono did really well. There wasn't really any kind of spicy mic drop moments, except maybe when he, in a similar way to, I guess, Max, as we'll get into at the NPC debate this week, wedged the LNP mayor on whether he thinks you know, house prices should go down or not, or whether they should increase. And I really like that our reps are asking this question of political representatives, or, you know, representatives of the property class, same thing.
The most basic of questions.
They cannot answer it.
There is a housing crisis. Housing affordability is a problem. Yeah. Should house prices go up or down?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very complicated issue. Yes, it's very, you need to know a lot about economics and supply, you see, and up or down, motherfuckers. Up or down? What about this Eagle Farm racecourse policy? So is that taking over a race? This is my understanding of it. I think I've read a headline.
Mm.
The council taking over a racecourse where we torture horses and turn that into land where we build affordable social or public housing. Is that right?
Yes, and green space. Yeah. Obviously both major parties have lost their minds at this proposal. I think this week we announced, it would be council could invest maybe $40 million, which sounds like a lot for a normal council, but for Brisbane City Council, that's a fraction of the budget. Deliver like at a, you know, inner city location that's currently just being used for torture. We could use it for public and community good. So it seems like a no-brainer to me. But yeah, the racing minister, Grace, whose seat also happens to be under threat from the Greens, was in Parliament this week being like, it'll never happen. She has a very distinctive voice like that. So
Jono did post a funny letter he received from a very disgruntled voter. I regard anyone representing a Green Party as one not to be trusted. I have a green thumb, but would never join a party of jealous misfits such as the Greens. So jealous that you wish to run as Lord Mayor.
I'm a gardener, however.
I am a tree Tory, sir, and I hate you.
Yeah.
and turf out the Eagle Farm Racing Precinct. You need to remove your rose-coloured spectacles and notice that apartments are already within this precinct, so clearly you envy their ability, working hard, to purchase in retirement and wish to surround them with inferior housing. I would be appalled, inferior housing, for the poor. I would be appalled if you were to become Lord Mayor. Greens are the party of envy. Members not deemed sound of mind to join one of the mainstream parties. We all know you are Labour light. How dare you, sir? How or ma'am?
Didn't pass the psych test to get into Liberal or Labour, so you joined the Greens.
Yes, look at all the mentally healthy and well-balanced people represented in our mainstream political parties. We're not even...
Yeah, exactly.
We're too weird to be like...
No psychopaths.
To be as normal as them. Fuck it up. All right, what else? There's other crazy shit going on in Queensland politics. I, again, briefly skimmed but thought that this was not worth my time. A story about Stephen Miles texting in Parliament,
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can give you the rundown on this and then maybe the listeners can let me know whether I'm right or wrong about this because I've had arguments with people in my life. So the story is October last year, Labor MP Ali King, who's a real character, was advertising jobs at a new satellite hospital in her electorate and asking applicants to submit applications to her electorate office, which is not good. Do not do that. That's really, like, that's a real corruption risk. I would agree. That was raised in Parliament. The LNP said it's a corruption risk. She ended up apologising. She was like, it was an error of judgment. I'm sorry I did that. Oops, my bad. Everyone kind of forgot about it. But I guess the LNP submitted an RTI application to figure out what internal correspondence was happening at that time.
What's RTI, sorry?
Right to information, okay. Like FOI. Freedom of information? Yeah.
Yeah, what you got your own Queensland version of FOI?
I didn't realise that's only Queensland. Yeah, it's called RTI here. Right to information. Anyway.
God's country. God's country. The Sunshine State. Not freedom of information. The right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know. We don't want to use what those Southerners use. Anyway, that I think was not fruitful. But then in February, just out of the blue, mysteriously in Parliament, the LNP asks Stephen Miles, the Premier, did you text Ali King between, 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. on this date in February or in October? And he's like, no, I didn't. This week, Channel 9 goes, hey, everyone, we are going to break your fucking brains. We're going to blow your minds tonight. We're going to broadcast an image that will set Queensland politics alight, spark calls for resignations, blah, 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 something like that, the Queensland political reporter from Nine News tweeted. They broadcast a story. What it is a zoomed-in picture, photo from within the chamber of Ali King's phone during the question time where she was being asked about having posted on her Facebook about send applications to my EO. And the texts are from Stephen Miles, who was not Premier at the time, but saying, you should get up and say, I apologize, effectively, like telling her what to do, telling her to rise on a matter of privilege suddenly arising or something, which is the way you can get up and give an explanation like that, and what she should say, that it was an error of judgment. And they're like, this proves that. So the issue is not the potential corruption risk anymore of what Ali King was doing or like that instruction. It's then becomes that Stephen Miles was asked, did he text her? And he said no.
Right.
But he did text her.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to pause at this point and be like, do you care?
I don't care about any of this, no.
No.
But I'm interested in, I guess, how they're trying to make political hay out of this. So the issue is not that why would they care that he texted her, or are they mainly trying to make something out of the fact that he said that he didn't text her when in fact he did?
Yeah, no, that's right. They're trying to make something out of that. They're saying he misled Parliament, he lied to Parliament, he lied to Queenslanders by extension because he said, I didn't text her, but he did. It's not, but I think it's that they know, like, and this is what's so kind of insidious about, the relationship between politics and media, is that they know that that's great fodder for a headline because you hear texting scandal, you think something scandalous has been texted. You hear, an image to be broadcast and you think that's going to be something interesting and scandalous. You know that this is going to and then lied in Parliament. It's all sounds really scandalous, right? Even though the actual substance of the issue is not scandalous at all, in my opinion. Like breaking, politician advises their colleague.
Yes.
And then, I mean, I guess you could argue whether he did know that he was lying when he said, I didn't text her.
Yes.
He this week got him in Parliament and apologised. He said that, you know, he said he misinterpreted the question, thought it was about this RTI application, and didn't know at the time that he had texted her. And upon reviewing it, yes, he did. And he's sorry that he, you know, potentially misled Parliament. I honestly don't know whether he just was like, I don't know what this is about. No, I don't think I texted her. You could argue that he should have just said, I don't know. I'll have to check my records. That's probably what he should have done.
Yep.
But in the scheme of things, like as we've spoken about before, politicians fucking lie all the time. This is not the biggest lie about whether he texted them. But then, so it's already, okay, it's already ridiculous. I'm already like, this is the most stupid thing to spend fucking time on. And then the way that the party, the major parties dealt with it in Parliament. So then they, Labour turns around and tries to frame it because their theme this week was it's International Women's Day, Women's Week or whatever. And they're like, you took a non-consensual image of a woman's phone and shared it. And they were getting, all these Labour MPs were getting up in Parliament and speaking about the LNP sharing non-consensual photos of women during International Women's Week. And like the, so Ali King was like, said, quote, as a woman in this place, as a woman, I'm accustomed to the way LNP members routinely disrespect female members during debate, but not once did I expect a member of Parliament to lean over my shoulder and take photographs and spread them around, which again makes it sound like it's something that it's not. Like, I actually think it's quite fucked up to be using the language of like revenge porn effectively when we're talking about sharing non-consensual photos or like upskirting or whatever, to actually just be talking about like a political, like a photo of a text between two politicians that's used for politics. Like, that is an entirely different thing. And yet the LNP member who took the photo in the chamber did in fact get up and apologize, Tom.
What's his name? Michael Crandon. Great name. Great name.
Michael Crandon. Crandon. And he had been reflecting on this so deeply that he actually got up and read a Bible verse about his... his actions. Fucking Queensland Parliament is insane.
What is happening in this place? What's wrong with you people?
He read Bible passage in 1 Corinthians 10:13, quote, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. And I know that God, when he said that, when he put that in the Bible, or when he instructed his disciples to write that in the Bible, he meant if you feel tempted to take a photo of your political opponent's phone in the chamber of Queensland Parliament, and you then spread that around to the media for a political hit job, you have a way out. You can get up in Parliament and apologize and quote from the Bible.
I think you guys should leave Australia. I think you should secede, form this great state that you're always talking about.
It's time for,
go on your own.
Quexit. And that's Queensland Parliament with Emerald Moon.
Meet
me in the mud in Brisbane. Let's talk about one of the few good Queensland politicians, Max Chandler-Mather, and housing, please.
Did you watch his National Press Club debate against Mike Zorbas, the head of the Property Council, this week?
I watched a little bit of it, yes. I saw some clips earlier in the week and I was like, oh, there's Max doing his classic good thing. And then I watched the full the full thing, the two addresses from the head of the Property Council. What's his name again? What's it?
Mike Zorbas.
Zorbas. Yep. Zorbas v. Chandler-Mather. And fuck, I loved it. I thought it was, once again, I know sometimes we're a bit of a like Max fan club on this podcast, but holy shit, such a great speech. And but also just the whole thing, the fact that he is a 32-year-old, reminded the fact that he's younger than me, which I find annoying, 32-year-old renter who is out there on the national stage at the National Press Club in a debate. You know, I don't think that has sort of happened a lot from Greens MPs before. Bringing it up right in the heart of the belly of the beast, calling out their bullshit and doing brilliantly, I think, and calling out this fucking industry for the evil vampires that they are. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is worth, that's right, just kind of driving home like how unusual it is for one of our MPs to be given the opportunity even to speak at the National Press Club. Like, I don't know if any of the other MPs have done that apart from the leader of the Greens. So that's quite interesting in itself.
Yeah, and for our housing spokesperson to be on the same platform as the head of the Property Council, right?
Like, yes.
And when they have a adversarial relationship, if the Labor housing minister
they'd
was
be
on that
doing a shared,
platform, they'd just be agreeing the whole time.
Yeah, they'd be doing a shared announcement. I can't remember where this was reported or who said this recently, but that Max is the default, like he is the shadow housing minister, which is the fucking objective of the Greens, right? Like that's a monumental achievement. Yeah. What did you think of how Mike Sorbas did though? I think he has a lovely voice. I think he had a smooth, deep voice.
Incredible voice. Incredible. Yes.
I think his LinkedIn says like he's a born communicator or something. And it's like, yeah, well, he's got a nice voice.
Lovely voice, nice beard. Clearly, a pretty smooth operator. Obviously, if you're the head of the Property Council, you're doing a lot of networking, a lot of handshakes, a lot of dinners, a lot of schmoozing all the time. I think he certainly had that prospect and certainly presented himself, played the role of someone who seriously is concerned about this issue. And the problem with Australia's housing system is, of course, government regulations and planning laws. And it's just a technical problem that we need to come together and solve. What does he say? Let's have a crack at working together to solve housing. So he does the first 15 minutes. Then Max gets up, boom, single woman in poverty, skipping meals so that she can pay for her kids' nappy rash. Like just immediately bringing this back to the crisis of individual people at the bottom who are shat on while this guy and his multi-million dollar business and his $1,000 suit gets to talk in very abstract terms about how, we can all work together and actually property developers are your friends and actually land banking isn't a problem at all. Mm-hmm. And if we do anything to affect the profits of my business or the incomes of property investors, well, we're only going to make the issue worse.
Yeah. 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 Like some of those were probably the most kind of stark clashes with Sorbas or between Max and Mike Sorbas were rent freezes, where the best part is, and I don't know if you got to this part in the debate, but Mike Sorbas had obviously brought along some sort of little thing that he wanted to read about rent freezes being bad, and he really desperately wanted to read it and kept like begging the moderator to be able to. He's like, if I could just read, and the moderator would be like, well, no, we'd like to go back to the questions, and he's like, yeah, but I just want to read. I got something about rent freezes that I want to read. He really wanted to read out his little rent freezes bad statement. Yeah, but he didn't get to. He didn't get time to read out how bad rent freezes are. So he was really sad about that.
Poor Sorbas.
Yeah, poor Sorbas. But his assertion that land banking just doesn't exist was remarkable, right? Like they're just denying that they land bank despite all of the evidence. And he says at one point to Max that he's like, your evidence on land banking has been light or non-existent even. And it's like, that's just not true, right?
Yeah, he sort of says, if you investigate it at all, the people who are apparently land banking, they all owe money to the bank and they have to have money coming back, interest. Brilliantly rebutted by Max in his speech when he literally quotes massive property developers, like members of the property capitalist class when they talk to the financial press and just being extremely honest about the fact that, yes, indeed. And it's just like, we're hanging on to this property and this land. We're not releasing more stuff. Housing prices are trending down, so we're just going to hang on to this property. We're not going to develop it. We're going to wait to develop and sell this land and this property when it's the most profitable, which again, just the constant recurring theme, the contrast between the two approaches, of course, Max saying if we want to actually seriously address the housing crisis, we have to do it in a way that does not prioritize profit, but actually prioritizes human need, and the private market has failed and is largely responsible for the housing crisis.
Well,
But yes, the idea that no, that just doesn't happen and they're just doing their best they can, guys. Ridiculous response.
And pointing out the number, and I don't have the number here, I've forgotten, but like the thousands of building approvals that have been issued that have just been sitting there not being actioned, which first of all goes to this idea that you just need to make it easier for developers to get approvals and that will solve the housing crisis. Obviously not, since they just sit on them. Yes. But also, proves that, they are just sitting there and land banking are waiting for house prices to fucking go up. Like to just deny that, it was so bizarre. But I actually, I think Max's opening address was good, but I think his final, his final statement where he spoke about what he was you know, fighting for, and the kind of absurdity of him having to get in there and fight against the property, the head of the property council on whether house prices should go up next year while a single mum is having to choose between, yeah, paying the rent or buying nappy rash cream for her baby. That was surely the moment of the entire debate. You would have seen that clip, right?
Yeah, yeah. If people did miss it, let's hear a little bit of it now.
30% of this country rents, and I'm one of the only ones in Parliament who rents. And every day I come into Parliament and I argue for things like stopping single mums from being evicted because they can't afford the rent by just putting a cap on rent increases, which has worked in Australia before and around the world. It works for renters. It doesn't work for property investors. I talk about building enough public housing so someone who has been waiting for 10 years, sometimes living out of their cars with a family, can move into a home. Talk about the fact that for my entire generation, we have been told that we are just going to get thrown to the wolves, that neither government is going to tax handouts for property investors. That even though I know that the Prime Minister was able to buy a home in Marrickville for $146,000, about five times the average wage, now if I was to go and try and buy a house in Marrickville, it'd be $2 million, 20 times the average wage. This is such a serious crisis, and all we're doing is tinkering around the edges. What? More power for property developers. Keep the tax handouts. Don't cap rents. Don't build any more public housing, or certainly not as much as the Greens are proposing. Well, I'll tell you where that leads. More of the same. And more of the same is me speaking to more single mums like I did over the weekend, who, with tears in her eyes, talked about the fact that she was having to skip meals so her baby didn't get nappy rash. I don't think that's sustainable. And let me tell you, there's a lot more people like me around this country who aren't in Parliament. Young renters, angry, upset with a political class that has me sitting here as a renter debating the head of the property council about solving the housing crisis. How did we get here? And I think over the next 2 years, the entire political class is going to find out what happens when you ignore the one third of this country getting screwed over by a housing system that funnels billions of dollars into the people that don't need it right now, like the banks and property investors.
And so this is like, I mean, he's talking about a reckoning coming for the political class, and I think that he is right, and that that is probably why in the audience you see the men in the blue suits, clearly from the property council side, that table full of like the white-haired men in their suits looking extremely concerned. Because I think surely they know that they're losing this argument and that people are starting to, the curtain is falling. And their shit is being exposed. And yes, they are land banking. And yes, they are holding back supply in order to increase prices because that is their objective. Their objective is not to supply housing. It is to make money. That's their job. And it's not a real job, by the way.
And hey, Labor, if the head of the property council is getting up at the National Press Club celebrating your Help to Buy scheme and all your housing policies, that should make you worried. That's like a warning. That's a red flag that maybe you're not doing the right thing at all. And I guess constantly absent from all this, you know, whenever anyone was shitting on the Greens policy, which we'll get to in a moment, or anyone is talking about doing anything about the housing crisis from the left, the kind of, you know, more radical proposals that the Greens are putting out there, they're saying, no, that's ridiculous. That will never work. The huge sort of elephant in the room hanging over that is, as opposed to what? As opposed to what your solution is to this problem, like as opposed to your vision in which housing prices continue to go up, in which there's no regulation, there's less regulation on the property industry. Like what are you actually, your alternative vision for how the housing market should work is going to make things way worse. But of course they can't do that. So they just shit on any proposal coming from the left that might restrict their profits or their power.
I mean, Tom, Mike Zorbas brought a 9-point plan.
What was that again?
You know, when someone's got a 9-point plan, they're serious. The 9-point plan, look, I don't know if we can, I'm going to tell you it's a little bit vague and it's a lot about planning regulations. One of the points of the 9-point plan, maybe I should get the exact wording, but it's something like investigate the role of rural and regional areas.
Just have a look into
it. So we got to do that. Yeah, consider the role of our regional towns and growth corridors. That's point 8, actually, of the 9-point plan.
God, okay.
So
And what are the others?
And I also, I love point nine, which was spend more of the monumental property taxes we all pay nationally on social and affordable housing, which just goes like, this guy doesn't even know that there are people who exist who don't pay property taxes because they don't have an investment property.
God. I also love that moment in which he defended the whole property industry, talked about how much tax they pay and how many jobs they provide, and there's no schools or hospitals or anything without the property industry. And it's like, yeah, they just do it all for the love of the game. They just love building shit, don't they? They don't get anything out of it apart from billions of dollars in profit. They just love it. They just love to help.
No. They're philanthropists, really. And, of course, all of this is happening in the context of this ongoing fight around tax concessions for property developers and the fact that the Greens are pushing for that in exchange for their support for the government's Help to Buy scheme, which we have spoken about before on the podcast. Where do you think that that kind of discourse is up to? Like, I will say I don't think there's been as much attention on this, or it hasn't been as intense certainly yet as the half debate got.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I certainly think that the Help to Buy scheme is less of a headline policy. I think, you know, it's less of a big, less of a centerpiece. You know, that Labor doesn't get to say $10 billion constantly when they're talking about the Help to Buy scheme. So I certainly think it's less front of mind for folks. And that face-off last year was certainly dominating headlines a fair bit. But I mean, again, credit to the Greens. We've again pulled the conversation into coming back to these tax concessions and forcing Labor to defend their position that they're fine and maintaining them are good, with almost no argument to back them up whatsoever, really, other than to say we tried in 2019 and we failed, therefore we're not going to do anything about it again, which we know is not a winning strategy. That shit, you just can't keep saying that constantly, because the Greens can keep saying, why are we giving billions and billions of dollars away to property investors when people can't afford their basic rent? It doesn't make any sense. At least engage us on this. Talk to us about this. This is crazy.
Yeah, and of course, talking about what better things we could be doing with taxpayer money, like the public developer, which was the announcement that Max made in that NPC speech, or on that day that he did the debate, about establishing a public property developer. So this would be a new government agency that would build 360,000 public homes over the first 5 years, and it would sell, so 30% would be available for purchase, and then the other 70% would be available for rent. Rent would be capped at 25% of the household income, and 20% of those rental homes would be reserved for the bottom 20% of earners. And for the homes that would be sold, that 30%, they would be sold at just over the cost of construction. So it's basically cutting out the profiteering element of providing housing, the bit that property developers don't like to talk about. What did you think about this proposal, this initiative?
I thought it was fucking great. Surprise, surprise. I endorse it. I, as a Greens member, I say thumbs up to this.
Tick of approval from Tom Ballard.
Look, you know, it took me a little while to get my head around all the details. And when you start saying 20% of this and three over the forward estimates, my brain does start to melt a little bit. But I try to read as much as I can to get it into my head. You know, it is a radical proposal. And, of course, the media class and the political class, of course, would say this is ridiculous and a pipe dream and idyllic. It'll never, ever, ever work. Because establishing a new government agency, a publicly owned agency to make something, which is what we used to do all the time, particularly in the post-war era, to compete with the private market and to provide a social good in housing outside of the profit motive, this is, in this neoliberal world in which you live, a crazy radical proposal. The job of Max and the Greens is to constantly say, no, this is totally doable, this totally happened, and this is good, and here are the reasons why. Yeah, that's the big challenge, but I thought Max did a very good job of it. And yes, the idea of the government directly building houses and managing who gets to buy those houses, who owns those houses, or who rents those houses is fucking fantastic. It would be amazing to see something like this come into existence in Australia in the 21st century, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, as so often happens, like with Greens proposals and the critiques of Greens proposals, there are the opposition comes from like contradictory ends. So you've got the people who say this is way too much. This would be a really significant proportion of houses being built in Australia. And that's just a pipe dream. That's unlikely to happen. How's a government agency going to do that? And then on the other hand, you've got people saying, well, there's only going to be this certain number of homes. And because they're offered on a, you know, pretty much a universal basis, it's a lottery, and which is funny because, of course, that's been the Greens' critique of the Help to Buy scheme, is that it's effectively a lottery for a tiny proportion of renters or of first home buyers. And Max addressed this in the debate about the importance of universality and the importance of creating, you know, mixed communities in public housing and allowing everyone to have access. That's not to say that, I mean, the policy does include that these homes initially, the applications for people who have a connection to the local area, whether they're First Nations people or they have people enrolled in the local schools or they work locally, have, you know, services that they need to use locally, they would be prioritised. And there is also that 20% of the rental homes that will be allocated for the lowest income earners. But there is also still that element of everyone should have access to, like, public housing should be for everyone, like it is in other countries. And that's where they have, you know, a much better kind of housing system that assumes that, yeah, like the government as a housing provider isn't just a last resort, isn't just for the, you know, the most marginalized people in society. It's something that we all deserve to have because the private sector shouldn't be the primary provider of housing. And that is, like, that is the work that this policy really does, is undo the idea that housing should be something that's primarily provided privately and that it's primarily provided for profit. Takes out the profit incentive and says, no, the government can do this just like the private market can.
And just like we do with health and education, right? And I think this is when Max was at his strongest, really just, you know, real light bulb moment stuff, real Google it make shit at the National Press Club. Once again, just sort of saying, hang on, we've decided as a society, and we all basically agree that that education and healthcare are important public goods that should be universally accessible to everyone. Now, we can talk about how all the problems and the way that that ideal has been corrupted and abandoned in lots of different ways in the neoliberal era, largely thanks to Labor governments. But, you know, that's the principle. That's the idea, right? So why, oh, why would we say housing, a basic fundamental human need, would be an exception to that rule? It should be publicly provided and accessible to everybody in a universal fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
As much as possible, of course. I mean, obviously there is a massive private housing market that will exist for the foreseeable future, even you know, once we get to a Greens government, we'll sort all that out and nationalise housing.
Yeah, yeah, we'll ban private property development.
Yes, and private property. But yes, I just thought that was like a really strong cut-through moment. I hope that gets a little bit of distance as well. And that's, again, part of shifting the debate, reminding people you deserve housing. You're a human being. You're a citizen of this country, goddammit. And your ability to have a roof over your head should not be left to the whims of evil, parasitic property developers or weird landlords trying to wring you out for every possible cent they can.
Yeah. And yet, yeah, I mean, at the same time as trying to propose something that is kind of outside of the realm of you know, well, it's far outside the realm of existing politics, right? It is a very bold, transformative proposal that then it's a big fucking thing for a government, for any agency, for anyone to build 360,000 homes over 5 years. That's a big task. And there's going to be so many elements to that. And of course, yes, the media, I guess, rightly are saying, well, how exactly would that work? I do think it's, you know, worth noting that a crossbench, like a minor party, does not have access to the same resources as a government to work all of that shit out. But there are answers to a lot of it. But yeah, some of the questions are like around, well, state governments would, this is on the basis that state governments are going to waive some of their charges, their taxes, they would have to waive stamp duty, et cetera. But as Max points out, I agree with Max. Like, I think it would be pretty crazy of state governments to say, no, we're not going to allow you to build like beautiful public housing in our states for our citizens. Or, you know, not public housing, but yeah, housing that is available to buy or rent really
discounted
cheaply.
Discounted housing, I think it was the
discounted housing,
the
right.
Discounted, yes. Yes, yeah. It'd be weird to see all the states suddenly become NIMBYs, just like the Greens apparently, and say, not in my little state.
Oh, well, exactly. These greenhouses, fuck off.
Yeah, because we're not going to get our stamp duty. No, I think that would be absolutely insane. One question that was asked a couple of times at the NPC, which I didn't really understand why I felt like Max didn't quite answer it, and that question is around, like, well, where are you going to get the land from? Are you going to – does this involve compulsory acquisitions? Did you see those questions when you were watching the debate?
The one question I saw was Tom Crowley from the ABC, who got up and said, look, you know, you've announced this policy. There's been lots of critiques, and he ran through a whole list of them.
Oh,
From land acquisition to constitutional considerations as well. Apparently there's been some doubts as to whether the federal government could do this constitutionally, yada, yada, yada. But, yes, acquiring land, compulsorily acquiring land is certainly a hot topic, or at least something that gets attention or something that people raise, of course, because it's often suggested that's something the government would never possibly do. How could the government possibly take away private land? That would be a disgrace or an outrage. You feel like Max kind of dodged it a little bit?
I do, yeah, and maybe it is just because maybe they knew that if we get drawn into that, that's going to be the headline that everyone runs with, which I think is disappointing, because I'm like, people understand, like, compulsory acquisition doesn't mean that the government just takes the land. They still have to provide fair compensation. Like, it can only be used as a last resort. If I were answering that question, I mean, I would assume that the reality of the proposal is that it includes, you know, like, and I think it does, the costing, the PBO costing includes acquisition at market rates, which would mean that it would just be through a regular, you know, sale with the owner. But that if property developers are, you know, or the owners of these properties are genuinely unwilling to give up the land, to sell the land, then, yeah, I think we should compulsorily acquire it. If they're not using it for anything fucking useful, then, like, use it or lose it, basically. Yeah, give it back. And the other important point, though, that Max did make is there is all this public land at the moment that's being handed over to developers by state governments in particular. And so I think the priority would be using that land for this kind of development and ensuring that it's not just going to private developers or, private companies.
And isn't the Queensland government kind of doing a bit of this? Didn't I see Stephen Miles saying, like, we've taken over a hotel or we've converted certain hotels or certain housing accommodation things and repurposing them for social and public housing?
They have been doing some of that, yeah. I can't remember exactly which ones they've done recently, but that's been one of the things that they've been talking about, which, like, makes sense. I mean, at the same time, they're giving away land, like, at the you know, Gabba Cross or River Rail kind of project for private development when they could just be building public housing there. And that's the thing that it's like, well, why would you not, use that land for this kind of thing?
Bloody oath. And then so Q Build, what's is that, like, a relevant example that we could point to, or was that that's no good? That's
well, this is so I didn't realize that other states don't have this. So Q Build is a Queensland government agency within, like, Department of Public Works that has played, I would say, different roles over time depending on who's in government. When Campbell Newman was in government under the LNP, it was absolutely gutted and barely did anything. But in theory, Q Build is a public building company owned by the state government. It mostly does maintenance on state government buildings, so, like, schools and hospitals and that sort of thing. Right. It has done a little bit of, like, prefab modular housing construction for small-scale social housing projects for Q Build workers. So it employs builders and apprentices, and it is saying, well, it's going to build the homes for the apprentices that work for Q Build to live in, the kind of this cute circular thing. But there's no reason, like, you could use an agency like that. That shows that, you can have a public building agency. You could expand that to employ more builders and other construction workers to build social housing. At the moment, social housing in Queensland, is usually, like, the construction would be outsourced to private construction companies. It's not necessarily Q Build doing that. But if you had a public developer, you could use, instead of contracting all of the building work out to private companies, something like Q Build to build it as well, which I guess, I mean, that also kind of goes to, there's this question of a labor and materials shortage, which is one of the other key critiques of the policy. But I think, as Max has pointed out, we've got building has slowed. Like, there was a lot of there was a construction and a materials shortage when there was a lot of building happening. But now that there is not a lot of building happening, that frees up skills and materials. And obviously there's still inflationary pressures on both of those on materials in particular. But the whole point of this proposal is that there's no profit requirement. There's no requirement for a profit margin, which is the reason that a lot of this development isn't happening, because developers are saying, sure, I could build this, but I wouldn't make money. So I'm not going to do it, because my objective as a property developer, a private property developer, is to make money. And that's why I'm not going to do it. But a public developer is going to say, well, my objective is to build the housing. And so I can do that. I don't need to turn a profit.
Yeah, again, great moments when Maxis is saying the boom and bust cycle of the property industry is a massive problem, right? And actually, if you as a government, he sort of says, like, one of advantage of the government saying, here's exactly how many houses we want to build over the next period of time, 600,000 houses or what have you, like that actually, once you've got that certainty locked in of like, we want to build this number of houses, you set that goal, that target kind of thing, then that actually affects the housing and property market in a way too, or the way that you organize and allocate resources to that project, to that idea of building 610,000 houses, you know, is actually much more secure than throwing it to the chaos of the market as supply chains come in and out, as that boom and bust cycle sort of affects your ability to build more houses. Again, if you're just in a constant, as you say, a mission to build houses, you know, directed by the government, you can get shit done. And I know the Australia Institute points to this a lot too. The other example is the Defence Housing Australia, right? Mm. Like we have a government body that was set up to build and manage property.
Yeah.
Now, it's for people who work in defence, okay, and they need houses and deserve houses too. We might critique their adventures overseas, but they deserve places to live. And what do you know? You set up a government body to build and manage houses outside the profit motive, and they can do it real well, actually. And they're often boasting of how great the DHA are, and that's sort of a good another example. And also the other examples from around the world, which Max was at pains to point out, you know, that this is not a insane idea that he's pulled out of nowhere or the Greens have pulled out of nowhere. We can look to our history here in this country, or we can look to real examples right now in Singapore, in Europe, where these kind of approaches do work. But of course, the property council will try to scare you and tell you that it's a fantasy that'll never work at all.
Mm. And I suspect, I mean, maybe we can put this photo on our Instagram. There's a great photo that you put it here in the show notes of Max during the debate from Newswire, where he's making a face that's like, I don't know about that. And I feel like this was when, what's his name? Mike Zorbas was like, look, you're never going to make housing more affordable. You're never going to solve the housing crisis by creating a new government agency or with another government agency. And he's like,
like that. He said that straight after Max had explained that in post-war Australia, that's exactly what we did. And one in five or maybe he's one like, in four houses were being built by the government. But of course, that just breaks their neoliberal brains and they can't possibly accept that.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is that, you know, Zorbas was constantly, his go-to line was about, well, you've released this policy, the Parliamentary Budget Office in there have done the sums for you, but in their report they've said, you know, what do they say, increasingly or very doubtful or something, like some kind of line of like it's very low certainty about whether you could actually implement
something like that.
this policy.
Yeah, but I think that they have to say that, like, because they're the budget office and they don't want – like they don't want to then be blamed if something goes wrong, you know, like, because of course it is. This hasn't, you know, something of this scale, as we've said, hasn't been done. And it's true. Like you don't necessarily know until you try it in Australia.
Yes. And I think, you know, while I have a lot of respect for the public service and I think the PBO and the Parliamentary Library are generally, you know, great resources that can be used by our MPs and very kindly, you know, do run the maths on these Greens policies, which is very good and helpful. You would have to say that, yes, the effect of the neoliberalization of the past couple of decades must have an effect on the public service. The limits of their political imagination and what is and isn't considered to be good policymaking or realistic policymaking would have to feed into those kind of reports.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do we want to just quickly touch on, because, I mean, one of the main critiques that Max keeps facing when he goes, you know, on these media appearances to talk about housing at the moment is this argument that, well, do the Greens want immigration to go up? I think this was maybe on Insiders a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
The host just repeatedly was like, okay, but do you think immigration should go down? Should immigration go down or go up? Mm-hmm. And Max is kind of at pains to say that, well, that's not what we're talking about here. Immigration is not the key driver of the housing crisis, as you seem to be arguing, and we need to stop using migrants as a scapegoat for this. I guess, like, the thing is, I mean, yes, immigration does have an impact on housing, but, and I can't remember who said this, I read this somewhere that it was like, it's not that we've messed up migration policy, we've messed up housing policy. And because the problem isn't migration, if we did housing properly, if we had actually provided enough supply of affordable housing to you know, track with increasing population, which is possible, that's not impossible by any means, then we would be all right. But the question is, yeah, instead of going to, is this a problem? Is this the cause of the problem or whatever? It's like, okay, but what is your solution? Because the solution could be to provide enough housing for everyone who needs it, or it could be to blame the people. And for some reason, you want to blame the people, you know?
When it comes to the Greens policy, I mean, I obviously haven't gone through it in any detail, and it sounds like neither have the Greens. I've seen that somebody has already described it as a very expensive and arbitrary lottery. I've seen that the PBO itself said that it was highly uncertain. I think one of Michael's colleagues might have called it a pretend policy in a column filed earlier today. I think this is consistent with how the Greens go about things. It's easy enough for them to write press releases with big numbers attached to it. They don't never have to implement anything, and they never have to make anything add up, you know, and they quite frequently promise tens of billions of dollars for all kinds of causes because they know that they don't have to make it all add up at the end of the day. We've got a broad and ambitious housing policy. We've got something like 17 different initiatives. We are investing tens of billions of dollars. And if the Greens really cared about housing affordability, they'd stop running interference in the Senate on our housing policies. If they really cared about housing affordability, they'd vote for our Help to Buy scheme, which is before the Parliament. I think this is a Greens party which, you know, they talk a big game when it comes to housing. But when the time comes to vote for more housing in the Senate, they go missing.
All right, this week's call to action, friends. We are obviously still thinking of the people of Gaza and Palestine. The fight for justice continues. Our Prime Minister is potentially a war criminal.
Alleged war criminal.
yes, very interesting story about a whole bunch of lawyers getting together and writing to the ICC and saying, hey, look into these guys who are the head of this government who are potentially complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza. Anthony Albanese says it had no merit and it was all misinformation. But
I don't know. Good to know. Yeah. I mean, worth pointing out for anyone who was getting their hopes up about this referral that it is just a group of people urging that this maybe be prosecuted by the International Criminal Court, is it?
Yes.
So it's up to that court if they want to do it. It's probably unlikely, but it speaks to the zeitgeist, right? And it's not a good look.
No, well, you know, Australia mentioned. I think it's great.
Because he was the first leader of a Western country, is that right, to be referred?
Yeah, well, and look, an annoying technical thing. It's technically not a referral. It's
right.
It's asking the people to investigate the thing. So yes. Referral's technically not their own. It's all very boring and stuff. But basically, you know, the argument being that there is some level of weight in the broad picture of things as we try to build pressure, as we try to raise awareness, as we try to remind people that even us in the West, like, we can be the baddies, actually. And
no.
International law isn't just for people in the
But we're mostly South. White, so I'm yes. not sure.
We're stupid white bastards. and just laying out the evidence. Australia is cut off funding for UNRWA. We are giving political cover and support to Israel, despite the International Court of Justice finding there's a plausible case they're doing a genocide. We're selling them weapons. We're letting citizens go over and fight for the IDF, even though they might be involved into a genocidal act. Bad news, Australia. Bad news. If you want to support Palestine, you can always go and check out the APAN website to see what kind of events are going on. Palm Sunday's coming up. There's lots of rallies. There's fundraisers, those kinds of things. Definitely worth a look. And we'll put a link to BDS Australia, have a site that you can sort of check your super fund and to make sure that your super fund is not funding Israel's apartheid regime and the genocide in Gaza, which I think is, you know, our super funds that we have to have
are probably one of the biggest financial assets any of us sort of have. And if you can direct and make sure that your fund isn't doing that, that can actually, you know, make a serious impact. Ethical investing is always a little bit dodgy, but I do think as an individual, that is an act that you can actually make a bit of an impact there. So, we'll put the link for that stuff in the show notes if you can check it out.
Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening now. Give us a 5-star review. It helps spread the word. You can also just tell a friend that you listened to this episode or another one and you liked it and you recommend that they listen. You can share our socials clips on your Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of those. We're at Serious Danger AU. And please come see us in April in NAM Melbourne and or Mianjin Brisbane. The tickets are at seriousdangerpod.com, as is everything else.
You could also come see me live, as a few Greens tragics did. A little bit of a plug here, but I did a gig in Nipaluna Hobart in Lucha Wida on Thursday night this week, and there was a row of people with their Greens t-shirts who were being very vocal, chiffing at their opinions on various political issues, and it was annoying but charming at the same time. And it was lovely to meet a bunch of danger dogs there too, particularly Angus, who's a very enthusiastic supporter via the Patreon. He got me to sign a copy of my book and a copy of Inside the Greens as well.
That's so funny. I mean, I think you know that book better than Paddy Manning at this point, even though you've only read 2 chapters.
I'm taking my time. Thank you, Danger Dogs, for coming to see me live on stage. The new show's got a bunch of referendum stuff, bit of anti-Labor. I've tried a few anti-Labor jokes, put them out there. It's good fun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, until next time, you stupid white bastards.
Bye, everyone.
Serious Danger Dogs.